So he wrote this oration in praise of Constantine, and it's quite interesting in that he definitely sees, he implicitly denies the legitimacy in some ways of the empire prior to Constantine, because he says that you need, in order to be legitimate, it needs to worship the one true God, because otherwise it's just in the servitude to demons. And he doesn't exactly explain how that's compatible with Romans chapter 13 and the powers that be ordained of God. But it's interesting that he's providing an alternative universal ideology, as it were, for the Roman Empire that's now fashioned on the basis of Christianity instead of on the basis of paganism. And then in 380, the Emperor Theodosius, who ends the Arian controversy, because many of these emperors in the meantime had been Arians and had persecuted Orthodox bishops.
Including Constantine's own children, right?
That's right, yeah. Constantius, his second son, he's actually his third son, but his first son was killed in rather unpleasant circumstances. But his second surviving son, he ends up ruling the East after Constantine's death in 337, and he favors Arianism, and eventually ends up ruling the whole empire after Constantine's other sons die. And so there's a period when the entire empire is ruled by an Arian. He then dies and is succeeded by Julian, who is a pagan and tries to restore paganism, but he is catastrophically defeated by the Persians and killed, and that's the end of his attempt to restore paganism. It's quite complicated, but generally the West is ruled by Catholics and the East is ruled by Arians until the Western Emperor Valens is killed by the Goths in a great barbarian invasion of the Eastern Empire, and his nephews, who are the two Western emperors, they're not very impressive figures, and they're slightly panicked at the prospect of having to go and save the Eastern Empire from the Goths. So instead they raise a famous soldier, Theodosius, to the purple, and send him as emperor of the East to go and deal with the Goths. But he's a Latin and a Catholic, and when he goes off to the East, he ends the Arian controversy, and it's under his auspices that the Second Ecumenical Council, the First Council of Constantinople, is held. But he also, the year before that, so the council is held in 381, but the year before that, in 380, he issues what's known as the Edict of Thessalonica, which formally makes Catholicism the religion of the Roman Empire. So that's a very important stage in the development of the sort of union between the Roman Empire and the Church. It's probably worth giving you the text. It's not really long. He says, "It is our desire that all the various nations which are subject to our clemency and moderation should continue to profess that religion which was delivered to the Romans by the divine apostle Peter, as it has been preserved by faithful tradition, and which is now professed by the pontiff Damasus and by Peter, bishop of Alexandria, a man of apostolic holiness. According to the apostolic teaching and the doctrine of the gospel, let us believe in the one deity of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, in equal majesty and in a holy trinity. We authorize the followers of this law to assume the title of Catholic Christians, but as for the others, since in our judgment they are foolish madmen, we decree that they shall be branded with the ignominious name of heretics, and shall not presume to give to their conventicles the name of churches. They will suffer in the first place the chastisement of the divine condemnation, and in the second the punishment of our authority, which in accordance with the will of heaven we shall decide to inflict."
Okay, so yeah, this is not good for ecumenism. We shouldn't talk about this. so this is the Codex Theodosianus, right? And
The Codex Theodosianus was actually issued by his grandson, Theodosius II. But that was a collection of all Roman laws that had been issued by the emperors since Constantine.
Okay.
And then Justinian later on collected together the whole of Roman law and edited it into a single code. And when he did that, he made this law the very first law in the code of Roman law.
It's interesting that this is done in Thessalonica, which, is, now, if I'm not mistaken, is in northern Greece or Macedonia, right? So This would have been something in the Eastern Empire, yet the reference, the points of reference are to Rome. And of course, he does mention Alexandria as well. But he he mentions the Pontiff Damasus, who was the patron of Saint Jerome, right, in writing the Vulgate or in translating the Vulgate. Right.
Well, I mean, it was seen. It was Rome and Alexandria. Well, I mean, Rome was always seen as the preeminent see in the church, but Alexandria was also highly prestigious, as was Antioch. Mm-hmm. But Antioch's copybook had been blotted, rather, by a heretical bishop of Alexandria called Paul of Samosata in the late 3rd century, whereas Alexandria had never really been seen to fall into error. And then during the Arian controversy, the bishop of Alexandria, St. Athanasius, had been much more heroic than the popes. I mean, there were heroic popes during that period, but there were also wobbly popes, particularly
Liberius.
So the prestige of Alexandria was extremely high at the point at which this. So it's natural that a Latin and a Catholic should have had reference to Damasus, but I think the additional reference to Alexandria is a tribute to the great prestige it had acquired in the course of the Arian controversy. But unfortunately, it's going to become a problem later on when a later bishop of Alexandria, Dioscorus, embraces the Monophysite heresy.
Yes.
Sort of convinced that he can't be wrong about anything, so he mustn't be a heresy.
so this is Theodosius's contribution now. Constantine frees up the religion in the empire and gives it a certain freedom to operate. Then Theodosius, roughly 67 years later, gives us this decree making it the official religion of the state and giving it official state sanction, even to the point of saying that heretical conventicles cannot be called churches. So that's a higher watermark, if you will. Now, the next one we're going to run into is a man famous, mostly, I think, in most people's minds who think about him at all, for law, Justinian the First.
Yes.
Law and expansion of the empire. Expansion of the empire back into some of the West.
That's right. So the Western Empire has fallen by that point. And there's actually been a long and difficult schism between the East and the West over compromises around Christological doctrine for political reasons. And Justinian's uncle, Justin the First, he ends this compromise because they're both Latins as well. They come from the Balkans and their first language is Latin. They're actually from extremely humble origin. And I think Justinian was a goat herd or something when he was a kid. So they submit to Rome and in fact insist on all the Eastern bishops submitting to a formula of papal supremacy, which is an embarrassment to the Orthodox to this day. And Justin the First, who precedes Justinian, is actually crowned by Pope John the First in the Hagia Sophia in Constantinople as emperor. So people often think Charlemagne was the first emperor to be crowned by the Pope, but it was actually Justin, which is also very intriguing. But there are some ambiguities around what actually happened there, but it definitely happened. So Justinian decided to, he was very keen to be the sort of, the model Roman emperor. So he, as you say, he reconquered large chunks of the West. He also, after a set of riots that devastated the center of Constantinople, he rebuilt in incredibly grand style the center of Constantinople and what was the greatest church in Christendom for many, many centuries. The Hagia Sophia was his great project, and he also held an ecumenical council, the Second Council of Constantinople, in order to try and end the argument with the Monophysites, and he, as you say, codified the whole of Roman law, which was a mixed blessing. But I mean, one of the reasons he had to do that was because Roman law was becoming